Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us here on this really gorgeous Thursday here in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Ski Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And the Hilsers General Store hotline open at 1-800-795-9565. Powered by Hilsers General Store. 7 miles south of Sealands Grove on routes 11 and 15. Go to www.hilsersstore.com. Yeah. Kevin Herb, America's ultimate fan alongside.
You know, if I didn't know any better, I'd think that was a compliment.
I think it's great that you're the ultimate fan. I do. I think it's great that you bring that kind of emotion to the table that balances the show. I know you hate at times my emotionless viewpoints.
Cold-hearted factual, I believe, is the word I would use to the words I would use to describe it. But yeah, that's.
But that's kind of the balance you want, isn't it?
But that's the way it's supposed to be.
Emotional, over the edge, and common sense.
That's the way it's supposed to be.
I'm talking about the show.
No, I'm saying that's the way it's supposed to be. You know, you have to balance out my irrational beliefs and tell me why.
They aren't all irrational.
They aren't all irrational.
Well, no. I mean, you'll bring some very good points and comments to the table. I sit back and say, okay, that absolutely is worth talking about, contemplating, and so forth. And then there was a moment of massive panic that set in.
There are a few of those. And if you're a Yankees fan, one of those moments of panic may be hitting right now with Chamberlain being on the 15-day DL now.
Sorry. Non-contributor doesn't help. He's on the DL almost all the time. He's undependable, and that doesn't bring with it panic. It probably, for most Yankee fans, brings with it, okay, again.
Relief to bring somebody else in.
Well, I'm just saying, though, but that's probably what it brings with it. Now, tonight, the national semifinals in men's volleyball taking place. Penn State is the number 4 seed after winning the EIVA championship. They will take on the number 1 seed Brigham Young tonight. Joining us from California right now on the Hilsers General Store Hotline is head coach Mark Pavlik. Pav, come down here 23-7. Are you a well-oiled machine at this stage, or are there still some issues at this stage?
I think anytime you've got a freshman setter and you rely on youth, you always have questions. What I don't have a question about is our ability to play hard. And, that's the key for us tonight. You know, we're facing a team that you look at up and down the lineup and you say, boy, they're awfully good. The Cougars have they're a great offensive team. And, we're just going to have to be as aggressive as all get out and not back off on our serving. Making sure that when we get chances to swing at balls for points, we're taking good rips. I made mention that, you know, over the years I've talked about playing big boy volleyball, where you don't just tap the ball around. You take good swings, and we got to do that because BYU is the best at it in the country.
They attack, don't they? I mean, this is a team that does not mess around.
No, absolutely, Steve. They want that big bounce when they hit. They want to throw a block together on you that the ball lands faster than the hitter does, and then they go back and celebrate, and maybe they look over their shoulder across the net at you, and they want you to be impressed with them. And I think maybe the beauty of being young is we're too stupid to know that. Any possible way a team can score a point against us, it's been done this year. And I think our guys are just going to shrug their shoulders and say, that's one point. Let's go.
Let's talk about the set. Because for you, you talked about having a freshman setter along the way. But at this point, has mentally Taylor made the transition to being a sophomore?
You know, I think he has. I think over the last 3 or 4 months, especially on the previous trip about 3 weeks ago out here to Orange County, I think he really started to understand that all you can do as a setter is if you've got a perfect pass, it's up to you to give your hitters the advantage by making a smart set, taking what the defense gives you. When you don't have a great pass, you don't force anything. You let your hitters give you the advantage as a setter, and you just put it up and say, here you go, Aaron. Here you go, Nick. It's going to be in a great place. Take your best swing. Hit me out of trouble.
Right. Have you served tough this year?
Yeah, we have. And now there's a little bit of inconsistency. And, you know, in our fans, it's interesting. You always get emails after matches. Congrats. Nice match. Work on your serving.
Right.
And you always hear people say, oh, it's match point or it's game point. How can you serve it out of bounds? Well, you turn that around and say, how can Tiger hit a driver out of bounds on the 17th fairway? You know, it's almost the same thing. And these guys are worried about mechanics more and more and more, which I think it bodes well for us. We serve well in the EIDA semis and finals. And serving is the one closed-loop activity in volleyball that the server could control from beginning to end. So it doesn't matter who you're playing against, you control everything. So hopefully we serve well enough to put them in trouble and make them predictable.
How well has Aaron Russell served for you?
Oh, boy, the last 4 or 5 weeks, Steve, he's really just let loose. It's almost as if he tried to fit in as an outside hitter. You know, we moved him from middle last year, and he's tried to fit in, and I think there was a team meeting at one point where the guys just kind of collectively said, okay, here's where we are, here's where we want to be. And one of the things that came out of that meeting, they said to Aaron, look, you're our big gun. You fire away at will. We're not worried about making errors because you're swinging at the ball and you're serving the ball really well. And boy, he came out of that meeting with just some great confidence, and his play just shot up after that.
Has Taylor had enough options to go with in terms of the attack besides Aaron?
And I think we lost Pav. What we'll do, we will come back, resume our talk with Mark Pavlik in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Pav's rejoined us in California. Mark Pavlik, sunspots is what you're claiming is the deal. All I know is the weather here is gorgeous, so I can't be on this end.
Times are not. We've come out to Southern California, and the weather has been better back home, State College, than out here.
Yes. Have you noticed that pattern and any coincidences?
Yeah, just send me out here anytime you want good weather.
I was asking about Taylor Hammond in terms of the ability to, you know, you have Aaron Russell, obviously, but has he felt like he's had more options as the season has gone along?
Yeah, especially with the emergence of Nick Goodell on the right side.
Yeah.
Nick has, for whatever reason, never really hit stride until about a month ago. And a couple of reasons for that. I think Nick came off of a very good end of his freshman year last year in the national semifinals, gave UCI all kinds of fits in the semis last year. And maybe Nick came back with the feeling of, I've got to do better. And instead of just doing what he's done and let that natural maturity take over. And I think he pushed a little bit. And then you take a release point from a setter going from Eddie Goaz at 6'6", 6'7", to Taylor Hammond at 6'1", 6'2", and just a different shape of set out there. And I think Nick tried to maybe do too much too soon and got himself frustrated. Plus, Tommy Comfort handled the job pretty well. But about a month ago, Nick Goodell just started to bomb away on the right side. And you look at how teams defended us halfway through the season, their left side blocker was sitting right in the middle of the court, daring us to run the right, our right side attack. Now they can't do that, or they're going to lose some back row players.
Getting a home to near Newport Beach is Connor Curry. Can you explain, for example, his value to you on an everyday basis as you've gone through this 30-match season?
Connor does for us what a good catcher does for a good baseball team. Kind of controls the offense, settles the setter down with his passing. Controls the defense, settles the setter down with his passing. Can give us that boost by making a dig on a hard hit ball, or just tracking a ball down that seems hopelessly out of bounds. And Connor, on top of all that, just terrific student, analyzes things really well. He's one of the guys that when he plays well, all of a sudden you see our hitters really teeing off, because he makes it so much easier for Taylor to put up those hittable balls.
You beat Harvard in five, then Harvard swept you up in Cambridge. Then they came in here in the EIVA championship. You swept them. Is that an indication as to how much better you are playing?
You know, we played well against Harvard, no question. But I think it's more of an indication how much travel plays in the men's game now. And I also think it's an indication of people. I think there's something to be said about making sure that you're managing the grind for your guys. I think that all three of the teams that came in last week, Mason, Princeton, and Harvard, at least as I sat there and watched them, they looked tired. They looked like they lacked some pop from the last time we had played them. And I looked at our guys, and you know, our strength and conditioning coach, Mike Chapman, just had these guys ready to go. Aaron and Nick were jumping out of the gym better than I've seen them jump since we started in January. And I think that, yes, we played better, but I also think that those in Harvard and Princeton, they're here for the first time at this level, and the next step for them is trying to figure out how to handle the grind.
One final question. I know when you get into a basketball game and I perceive one team as being the underdog to the other, sometimes we'll talk about winning each media timeout. And if it's really swayed one way, then you talk about possession by possession. But try to win each media timeout, because looking at the entirety of the 40 minutes sometimes mentally is tough for them to comprehend. If you break it into increments, it's easier. And as the game goes along and you're winning increments, suddenly the big picture becomes palatable. You're going into this one mentally. What's the approach they need to swing it their way tonight?
I think that's a great way to look at it. I think we want to look at it in 5-point increments. You know, let's make sure we're hanging around. Let's make sure we're 10-8 or 8-10. Let's make sure we're, you know, 14-15 or 15-14. Let's get to 20-20 against a team that's been told they're really good, and looking across the net at us saying, how can those guys be hanging with us? And as we get into the 15s and 20s, hopefully we're young enough and dumb enough to just say, hey, nobody expects us here. Let's just play loose, free, and easy and take some great swings. And then I think you got to forget games one and two or three or four or whatever. And then I think you start to react like you're a guy Gutowski, and you start looking at, okay, we wanted to do this in period one. We did some of this well. We didn't do this well. Now let's go back out and win period two. So I think there's ways that these guys have to understand that the whistle's going to blow for the first serve, and you're not going to be at match point in 2 minutes.
Right.
It's a journey that you got to enjoy along the way. And our guys, I think they really love to compete, and hopefully that's a big weapon for them tonight.
Pav, good luck tonight. Appreciate it very, very much. Head coach Mark Pavlik, head coach of the Nittany Lion men's volleyball team. They play in the national semifinals tonight as they take on top-seeded Brigham Young, Penn State, BYU tonight. And you do have to look at it. I think that psychologically there's a part to that. And I brought this up before, Kevin, that the first time I really heard this theory about the entirety of it was actually from Dean Smith. I was sitting in Syracuse at a Dean Smith press conference in 1991, so 22 years ago. And he said, look, we break up the tournament. He said, I can't look at my team and say, look, let's look at winning the national championship. Because in order to do that, you have to win six games. He says, so what we do is we try to break it up into increments. All right, we play in tournaments during the season. We'll play in the Maui Invitational. We'll play in the Barclays Classic. We'll play whatever it happens to be. And in order to win the tournament, you have to win two games. He said, so what we do is we talk to them about, okay, look, let's go win opening round of the tournaments in Syracuse. So let's win the Syracuse tournament, two games, which is what they're used to doing. Next step in the tournament may be the regional, and it's at Lucas Oil Stadium. So let's win the Indianapolis tournament. And then the final four may be in Atlanta, so now let's win the Atlanta tournament. And he said, that's how we tell our players how to approach the NCAA tournament and break it down. Whenever I've been in situations where I have a perceived underdog in front of me, and it's an underdog that's capable of winning, but if they approach it right, they can win it. Dick and I always talk about winning the media timeouts, breaking the game down into 10 winnable increments of 4 minutes each, which then leads to winning the game. Because winning the game, especially when the world on the outside is telling you that you can't do it, they're much better, the 40 minutes overwhelms you in terms of the enormity of it. But if you break it down into increments of 4 minutes each, okay, let's win the first media timeout. You get to the first media timeout, you didn't win it, but it's 6-6. Okay. Then you get to the second media timeout, and you outscored them 8-6. Well, now the score of the game is 14-12. And then you go through each media timeout with them to win that 4 minutes. Throw everything you have into winning that 4 minutes. And then suddenly, as it goes along, you now hit the under 12 to go in the second half. And that under 12 to under 8 normally determines how the game is going to swing, I'd say 7 times out of 10. You get to the under 12 to the under 8, not the final 4 minutes of the game, which the world concentrates on. It's that under 12 to under 8 that then tells you whether you are there for the long haul and you're going to have a chance to win it or put pressure on them to win it. You get to that point, now the enormity of winning it is on the table. Penn State is the decided underdog tonight against top-seeded BYU, so he's going to take it, as I mentioned, in five-point increments. Let's take this and win 5 points. Let's win 3 out of the 5. And then break it down into segments such as that. And that takes away the enormity of the task in hand. And I think that's a big psychological part of it. I mean, for the most part, I'm not big in, I am not one, never have been big into the, all right, you know, close your eyes and focus on the basket and see the front of the rim and visualize and the whole thing. I'm not a believer in that. I never have been, but I know a lot of coaches are. because they're trying to, in a relatively even world, find an edge. And I understand that part of trying to find a mental edge. But I also think you can overthink yourself into oblivion. But I also think there is a psychological part where there is an enormity to something, where you have to break it down and give yourself a mental edge in smaller segments.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
It's great to be with you on a beautiful Thursday, and it is beautiful out. 70-plus degrees. Go to the phone, talk with us at 800-795-9565 in the Hilster's General Store hotline. Talking sports with Kevin Herr. Tomorrow I will bring up, I promise you, I'll bring up the topic of Roy Halladay with Rob Dibble. How about that?
That'll be great. I mean, you know, he would have a pretty good idea what the issue might be. If there is an issue, I'm assuming there's
It couldn't be that maybe he's lost control of that great breaking ball. Couldn't be that, could it?
What do I always tell you about things
Doesn't quite have the great snap on the breaking ball you used to have. A little flatter now when breaking ball flattens out.
You're getting paid an awful lot of money to throw a baseball across the plate, figure out a way to make it work.
Yeah, but if you don't have any snap in your breaking ball anymore.
Find a new pitch. It's a lot of money.
It's not as easy as you think.
I know.
Roger Clemens, and we can talk about whatever, you know, with Clemens, but what Clemens did was that Clemens had a very good curveball. You know, not awesome or incredible, but Clemens had a very good curveball. Great fastball. But what did he do? He then added in the forkball, the split. And the arm motion of a split is the same as a fastball. So you can disguise it, especially if it's a good one, because, you know, look, there is not a splitter, for example, that ends up in the strike zone. The splitter is an out of the strike zone pitch. Nolan Ryan developed tremendous snap on his curveball, which then became the off balance pitch. And right now, Halladay does not have snap on his curveball. Just flat out does not have snap on his curveball. You can see it. And it's a big problem right now for him moving forward. I mean, the nights when he has some snap on the curveball, you notice he's pretty effective. When it's flat and he's struggling with it, yeah. And the dude's logged a lot of innings. But it's May 2nd, and as much as you relish panicking, I wouldn't panic yet.
Yeah, let's have the same conversation in August and see where we're at.
Now, let's remember, the Washington Nationals are supposed to run away with this thing. Yet Bryce Harper's banged up. Strasburg doesn't remotely look the same. He's falling off toward first base right now. I mean, he is not, I mean, his pitchers need to repeat motions. Strasburg is not repeating his motion, and he's falling off to first. Why? So you don't have the Nationals being a dominant team at the moment. The Braves are off to a tremendous start. The door is open to Philadelphia, especially with the new wild card that was instituted last season for the first time, in which you do have two wild card teams. Three division winners and two wild card teams. So, in other words, the door is open where if you settle down and play it right and understand the length of a season, you can make some good things happen. And, of course, not have fans that panic their brains out. Hello?
Listen, I told you, I'm waiting till June.
Hello?
I'm waiting till June.
Hello? You all right? Hello?
I'm still enamored by this conversation you and I had a few minutes ago about the three Tampa Bay pitchers that were fined and the umpire that was fined $1,000.
Well, he should have been. The umpire should have been fined. He lost control of the game, and he's a big reason behind the incident. Yes, he did. He lost control of the game.
All right, how did he lose control of the game?
Because he's the one that looked at the pitcher and told him to throw the blank ball over the plate.
Allegedly.
No, not allegedly. Everybody says that's what he said on both sides. That's the problem Tom Hallion has. That's what he said.
Now, of course, Hallion denies that.
Well, he can deny it all he wants, but guess what? He's got too many other people that are witnesses saying he said it.
But the thing, the argument that I have with Major League Baseball is then make that the reason that there's a fine. I mean, in every report I've heard, the fine for the players, the three pitchers involved, let's see, it was Hellickson, Moore, and David Price. Price was the one that threw the pitch that he thought was a strike and wasn't called. And he said it was that way all game. But that's beside the point. I mean, he was the pitcher of record at that point. All three of those pitchers were fined $1,000 for tweeting after the game about an umpire. That is against Major League rules, period. Right. That's a violation.
It should be.
Right. The fine for the umpire, though, is not really described. What's the fine for Hallion? Why did he get fined? And if it's fined because of foul language, okay, then is that a rule in Major League Baseball that the umpires aren't supposed to do that? And if that's the case, then why aren't managers held to that same standard?
They get fined. They get thrown out.
They get thrown out of the games, but they don't always get fined when they get thrown out of the games.
Depends on what they did.
That's true. But my point is, if he's fined because he didn't handle it properly, I'm not sure that that's a legitimate fine for an umpire.
Sure it is. He lost control of the game. And you don't tell a pitcher to throw the ball over the plate. Just keep your mouth shut and tell him get in the dugout.
Yeah, I think he's allowed to respond somewhere as long as it's not negative.
He's not.
If he could say
No, I think he's allowed to say throw the ball over the plate, I'll call it. No, he's not.
Yes, he is. I disagree with you completely.
If you look at him and just say, just pitch. You pitch, I call it. Okay? That's all you got to do. You don't tell him to throw the ball over the plate, and you don't use an expletive to do it. You should be fined. He handled it wrong. He deserved to be fined. In fact, he deserved to be suspended.
Nah, see, I think that's way too far.
Oh, yes. You lose control. You cannot lose control of the game. You are the arbiter of the game.
When you say lose control, though, I'm looking for a violent act. I'm looking at a mask getting thrown across. I'm looking at an umpire and a player with their faces in each other's faces. That happens all the time, and nobody calls that the umpire losing control of the game. And how many times have we seen that over the decades?
That is because the other people provoked it. Okay, they're the ones that came out, they argued about it, they lost control, the umpire then fired back in response.
Okay.
From what I'm understanding is that, I've been happy about it, but what started the exchange in terms of everybody being upset is what Hallion said.
Well, and that may have been. I just watched the video, and it's not real definitive on what happened. What I saw was Rice after the out, which was a ground ball back to the pitcher. He flips it. I mean, no harm, no foul. It wasn't a big deal because he got the out anyway. But he's chewing something in the direction of home plate when he walks across the first base line.
Right, which happens all the time.
Which is inappropriate because that's
no, it's not.
That's directed at the umpire. If you're purposely turned toward the umpire and directing your comments, that is an ejectable offense right there.
No, it's not.
Why not? Why is it okay for a player to argue a call or even remotely argue a call?
Why can they argue a call? Of course you can argue a call. You can argue a call. You can say, look, and then if they want to talk, then talk.
That's my point. That's exactly my point. If if Price would have crossed the line, across the foul line or first base line and said something like, boy, that was a really close pitch, then that's, I mean, I don't know what he said. I don't know what he said. What I could tell you was it didn't look very polite by the expression on his face. But if he said something like, boy, that looked like a really close pitch, or hey, how close was that last pitch that you called a ball? That's a different story. But if you go out there and you say something, and again, I don't know what he said, but if you say something like, wow, you can't tell the difference between a ball and a strike on the outside corner. Sorry, eject him. That's not the way the game, I mean, the umpire has control of the game. His call is the final call.
Yeah, so?
Okay. I just think you're taking a lot of control out of the umpire's hands in a game that was supposed to be controlled by the home plate umpire. That's the way the game was designed.
This is being spoken by somebody who's been an umpire for a long time.
Absolutely. Right. Thank you for that. Disclose that. You're right.
And guess what? You guys aren't always right.
No question. But I won't tell you that until I leave the field, because I'm right when I'm on the field.
You know, first of all, if he's not being verbally abusive to him and says, look, you know, I'm not happy with how this is going, or, you know, kind of cut me a break here, I'm sorry.
Yes, that is not objective. Okay? I agree.
Okay. Halligan can't say just throw the ball over the quote effing plate.
Right.
Okay.
No question. Right. I agree with.
Now Halligan says he didn't say that. His problem is other people did hear him say that. Thus he's fined.
And I would like Major League Baseball to say we're fining him $1,000 for this. The way they said for the three players, we're fining them $1,000 for violation of the social media policy.
Right, and the player should have been fined for violating the media policy, because you know you can't be putting that out there.
Right.
You just can't be.
That's right.
So, I mean, Halligan's being fined, obviously, for stepping out of bounds.
And if he indeed said that, then I just wish they would have said, this is why he's being fined $1,000. Because then I would agree with you then.
They also said that Halligan was fined for his personal post-game language.
Yeah, again, I don't hear any of that. I didn't see any of that. I'd like to know what the language was after the game that was, you know, abusive or however. Now, the one thing he did say when asked about it following the contest to a pool reporter, I'll come right out bluntly and say he's a liar.
Right.
Now, is that the way you want an umpire to be talking to the media? No. Is it finable, suspendable? If that's what they're suspending him for, then okay. But
he's not being suspended. He was fined $1,000.
Right, but I'm saying if he's being fined or suspended for that comment, okay, I can understand that, I guess.
Well, that's what he's being fined for. He's being fined for both his comments on the field, and he's being fined for what he said after the game. You know, I mean, he wasn't fined $100,000. I mean, these guys make decent money. He was fined $1,000.
It's like
you being fined $10. You know, I mean, putting it over in the curse jar.
I think I've seen a lot of these incidents with umpires come down, and I just don't know that it's handled in a consistent manner anymore by Major League Baseball, for one. You know, umpires have the hardest job in baseball. And yes, I say that because I have umpired games at a youth level. And I'm telling you what, sometimes I think that's harder than a major league umpire, but
it probably is. I mean, it probably is, because you know, I will admit I rarely, if ever, and I was very fortunate at this, rarely if ever had problems with a with a parent at a game. I really didn't.
I only had one,
right.
And I wasn't the umpire in chief of that game, and I wasn't the, but I was part of a game where a parent was ejected.
So in other words, your crew was known as the Butchers of Seville.
Well, listen, there was words you're not supposed to say on a Little League baseball field, for one, let alone near it. And
right.
That was the automatic ejection right there.
And I understand that. I understand that. Yeah, but you know, the rumors that run through the valley are that, you know, I mean, you boys had a quick trigger.
No. The rumor is my strike zone's the size of the head of a needle. That's what the rumor is.
I just saw the SEC ESPN network logo.
Yeah.
What's wrong with it?
Well, where do you see, all right, I'll go back to what I said earlier. Where do you see Fox Sports in the Big Ten Network logo? Nowhere.
Everybody makes their own choices in marketing. There's nothing wrong with that.
Nah. Is it the SEC network or is it ESPN's network?
You're just worried they're going to put it on your cable system and you're going to have to pay $100 more a month.
Yeah, because I could care. I got a friend who's a Tennessee fan, but I could care less.
Because you don't want to watch Kentucky play Auburn.
Nope.
In anything.
Nope. Like I said, I have a friend who's a Tennessee fan. He'll be ecstatic, not me.
Well, with the grant of rights, expect the ACC to be the next to announce that they're putting together a regional network. And the ACC, believe it or not, in their footprint, actually has more households than any other conference in the country. We will come back with more as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
I really need a used car.
Sunbury Motors has lots full of used cars.
But it has to be a good used car.
Well, they're not good.
What?
They're great. Sunbury Motors has over 300 used vehicles to choose from. Cars, SUVs, and trucks so good, we wouldn't sell them if we wouldn't drive them. That's probably why we consistently sell over 200 cars a month. And when it comes to new, Sunbury Motors is the largest Ford dealership in the central Susquehanna Valley. Sunbury Motors makes buying a new car easy with a huge inventory and lots of choices.
And I'm a smart shopper, and I know what the price should be for the car I want.
Well, here at Sunbury Motors, you get our lowest price promise. We research prices on used cars so much that if you find a better deal, we'll beat it. That's a promise. So here's your keys.
Thanks.
Take a test drive today at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and our Kia dealerships at Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Shop 24/7 and see our inventory at sunburymotors.com. That's sunburymotors.com. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Very quickly, Kevin talks about the logo of the SEC network. Actually, I think Kevin's right about that. If I'm the SEC, I want it to be known as the SEC network. I know they're utilizing the Charlotte studio for ESPN that they use for ESPN Regional that Mike Leeson's worked out of for years. But if I were them, I would want the branding to be the SEC network and just have it be the SEC network as my branding. Branding is important. And having, you know, ESPN's logo on there and so forth. Look, you know, they may be involved in it, but the reason they're doing it is because of the Southeastern Conference and the conference's popularity. As for the Cubs and Wrigley Field, the Cubs are right. For one thing, everybody in those rooftops for years, I know that the businesses in those areas do pay 17% to the Cubs. But the Cubs have to change Wrigley Field, and they have to modernize it. You have to give all the modern amenities. And yes, the scoreboard does mean something there. That scoreboard means $20 million a year in revenue, which could be a marquee player or could be two players that you would need to get in the free agent market, two out of your 25. And if you're getting $20 million a year from the scoreboard that could potentially help improve the product in the field, you have to do it. Now, if there's a way to compromise and put seats above a certain area that are outside the park and, you know, whether it deals with Waveland Avenue or whatever, I don't know if it's possible, like the Red Sox did, obviously, with the monster seats in left field. But I've watched them take Fenway Park and what many people thought should be torn down in 1999 with a brand-new Fenway built next to it. Because Fenway Park, for a long time, going all the way back into the 60s, early 70s, Boston talked about having a cookie-cutter stadium where both the Red Sox and Patriots would play. They talked about that, and then they kind of shelved it and pushed it to the side. And then finally, you know, Sullivan Stadium, you know, Schaefer Stadium, Sullivan Stadium was eventually built in Foxborough. And then the Red Sox kept going along with Fenway. In 1999, John Harrington wanted to tear down Fenway, keep the left field wall and also part of the third base corner area and as a museum and have a brand new Fenway built next to it. They could never get the neighborhoods to agree or acquire the land to do it. Well, the new owners came in, led by John Henry, Tom Werner, Larry Lucchino, and they said, look, we have a gem here. We can make this into something, and they did. Put monster seats over the left field wall, put in a family section in right field, change the amenities around the ballpark, put in new seats and so forth. Wrigley needs to do the same thing. They need to take a gem that is 99 years old now, it'll be 100 next year, 99 years old now, and they need to make it in such a way where the inside, the confines are friendly. The people have been getting the freebies by sitting on the roof for years. Look, in life, you can't get everything. Eventually, even Napster, you had to start paying for music, people. Okay? I mean, eventually, you had to pay for your music. You couldn't get it free on Napster anymore. All right?
That's a good analogy.
You want to see I mean, if you want to see the Cubs play, go into the park.
Better seat anyway. You'll see more.
But their job is to run the business of baseball in Chicago. If they need to put a modern scoreboard in that's going to garner the $20 million a year to improve the product, do it.